Blog Talk Radio.
When the Empire calls, my brothers, sisters, and comrades in Tijuana, I welcome you, delegates of the excluded, people from Cuba, Nicaragua, Venezuela, and beyond. Many of you come from poor nations, countries with relatively low GDPs, like Cuba, for example, which has a GDP roughly equal to Ghana. As I write from the richest nation on earth, I have to add that I also write from a nation that cannot protect its own children. See the ugly massacre in Texas, where 19 babies were slain in elementary school while cops prowled the halls. Here, tens of thousands of former students can't afford to pay their loans to schools and colleges. Again, look at Cuba, where people can go from kindergarten to medical school for free. And not just Cubans, for students can go to medical school in Cuba, even if they aren't from Cuba. And remember, Cuba isn't a rich country. It does what it does because it dedicates its resources to public service medicine. What does it matter if America, with all its riches, couldn't prevent the deaths of 1 million people, 1 million people, because of COVID-19? In fact, you can go to any ghetto in America and see hunger and poverty, people who live in food deserts, people who are homeless, in fact. You'll also find the greatest level of imprisonment in the world. So why should poor nations listen to rich nations? What do they have to teach us? Racism, class strife, violent cops, corrupt politicians, greedy businessmen, militarism, and excluded of the world have only each other. If we work in solidarity, we sure can do better. Thank you. Muchas gracias. With love and fear, this is Mumia Abu Jamal. These commentaries are recorded by Prison Radio.
Who will pay reparations on my soul?
She got to carry me all by herself.
And greetings. Welcome to another segment of New Day, Resurrection and Liberation. My name is Empress Chi, also known as Dr. Filet. Well, we are, of course, in what's known as Black Music Month. Well, we're going to talk a little bit about some Black music, some real Black music, y'all. Not some of this garbage they got going on right now. But with that said, I always ask the question, when there's a problem with something, what are we talking about doing about it? Well, MWM definitely has a plan of action. We call it the Black Print, Agenda 25. And we're going to be issuing it this year as a part of our 25-year anniversary commemoration. We've been working on it for quite a while, and now it is ready to present to our people. And we're going to do that at our first A Million Black Women Rising Summit, which is going to take place here in Philadelphia and some of it virtually. But we're going to be in Philly from October the 23rd through the 29th. Sisters are going to meet. We're going to really sit down and map some stuff out. And when I say map out, I'm talking about a 3 to 5 year plan of action strategically in local, regional, national, and international arenas. Now, you just heard a few moments ago the great Gil Scott-Heron, who going to pay some reparations for my soul. Meaning, hey, no matter what they give us, it can never be enough. I mean, because they definitely can't pay for our soul, and they really can't pay for nothing else. However, we need to get everything that we can, and that is why in September we will be going to Washington, D.C. We charge genocide 21. 21 points, 21 areas of crimes against humanity as it pertains to our people. Nobody else at this stage of the game, at this point in time, we're taking care of home first. And that means we are declaring self-determination. We are declaring we must have reparatory justice. And we have a plan of action again to map that out for you. Now, I was talking with my sister earlier, Sister Veronica, Sister Nikki, and she mentioned that this year for the pilgrimage for Malcolm X, which, of course, is every year. Of course, they're returning after 2 years of not being able to go because many things were shut down these past 2 years. But they did go this year. It was very, very good as usual. And then the after program at the Shabazz Cultural Center, Sister Nikki said that the conversation was that we're focusing on, doing the work of Brother Malcolm. And this is something that we've been raising for a while. You know, folks say they love Brother Malcolm and he was great and all of that. But then when you ask, so what work do you do that represents what he not only taught, but what he died for? So, family, tonight, part of our conversation is going to be about ancestors. How folks talk about ancestors, but when we ask ourselves, so what do you actually do that represents the ancestors, that continues their work and legacy? So with that said, we're going to talk with, I had the opportunity, I don't go on Facebook much. I primarily go on to post things just to review periodically, but I don't waste a lot of time on no fake book. This time, however, recently, I did get a chance to connect with a brother that I just fell in love with his work. He posts a lot of wonderful kinds of things. And this one particular thing he posted was right up my, thought processes. And it's focusing on ancestors. And he was real poignant. I'm going to try to pull a little bit of it up. But he's going to be joining us tonight. And we're talking about Baba Omowale Oladiya. And I'm like, wow, when you hear what he has to say about something, and it was almost like he was in my brain, because we have to put folks in some check, meaning, there's always this demigrating of people, us as a people, that is, and talking about, oh, they worship the ancestors. No. And I watch folks sometimes when I hear people saying that and they don't say anything. And when I saw Baba's video, I was like, oh, yeah, we got to get this on. Because to honor, to pay homage, to embrace our ancestors is not worship. And we need to get that clear and straight. We're not talking about worshiping. But again, Baba says it even better than I do. And so the other thing I want to share is that for those who do not know, we're going to also be talking with my brother, Dr. Haseen, who will be coming to Philly soon to do a book signing and a lecture on several of his books. I'm going to tell you about that shortly. Because again, MWM is really moving forward now, again, with COVID kind of moving out the way, we're able to move forward as well. And going back to Brother Haseen, Dr. Haseen, the way we met, of course, was by the request of Dr. Kwabinan Ashanti. I was asked to come where he was honoring me and others, and in doing so, giving us honorary doctorate degrees. And this is when I met Dr. Haseen, who's been my brother, my comrade, for lack of a better terminology, since. And so one of the things that people don't know is that my honorary doctor's degree is in African spirituality and ritual. And so I've kind of been holding back on that because I really want to just observe a little more before I, you know, went more into my writings. And that's what I've been doing in this past year. So I've been really evaluating, researching, and writing. And let me tell you, when you see what we're getting ready to bring to you, it's going to be very interesting. And with that said, MWM will soon be introducing a couple of systems. Now, I'm not going to go into it right now because these are going to be actual lectures and sessions that we introduce. But for those who really are ready to come out of this white supremacist mentality, programming, and all of that, we're getting ready to bring some real African, not just spirituality, but traditions, and not necessarily religion per se. Now, that too. But, well, when I introduce it to you, you kind of get what's being said, as with others. And again, utilizing some of our prayers, some of our meditations to fight the enemy, y'all. All of this stuff about, oh, we got to pray and we got to love and all of that. Oh, absolutely. There's no question about that. However, wouldn't you think that our Creator would want us to defend ourselves? And since many people say, oh, we're in a spiritual war, well, okay, and so how are you fighting that back spiritually? See, we're going to venture down the road that a lot of people don't want to, and it's okay, because maybe it's just not for them. But some of us are not scared. Some of us are not, I started to say coward, but I won't say that. Some of us are not just accepting what these people are trying to continuously do, because they've done it, needless to say. Look how dysfunctional and dismantled we are. But the point is, again, what are we going to do about it? Well, some of us have some responses, best believe, and we're getting ready to make it very clear. Also, we've been talking about other kinds of entities, components that need to happen in our community. Now that I've done the research that I've been working on, I'm really ready and able to bring forward some clarity about what's going on in our communities and why. The kind of envy, jealousy, but also the kind of manipulation from the cultural aspect of things and how it's being used against us. And it's so interesting the way this is happening, because when you look to see what are we talking about in terms of longevity, what are we talking about in terms of actually educating our children, keeping our culture, and then making certain that it's a day-to-day observance and not just a Kwanzaa time. Well, we're going to start breaking that down for you, because it's real interesting how there's some other kinds of stagnation and people getting in the way right in our community. Now, some mean, you know, they don't really intentionally mean that, but some do. And so at some point, that has to be dealt with. At any rate, tonight again, we're going to talk with Baba Oma Wali Olanija, and we're going to also talk with Dr. Hasim Kambui. And with that, we're going to do some real truth to power kinds of dialogues and conversations, family. And so let me see what we got here. Hold on one moment. Also, again, this is Black Music Month. And I wonder how many people know the history of Black Music Month. How did it actually get started? Well, you know, I kind of like Philly, at least in the context of certain kinds of history. And so Philly was very instrumental in Black Music Month being, you know, brought into fruition. And of course, now it is a national observance. And it actually did get, you know, some kind of proclamation or whatever they do by way of the White House. By the way, Juneteenth just got it, what was it, last year or whatever. But the point is that Black Music Month is literally, even though it's not a federal holiday, but it is a actual day or a month that was, you know, officiated through the President of the United States. And it just so happened to have been Jimmy Carter. the first observance, official observance of National Black Music, in some said Black Appreciation, Black Music Appreciation Month, was on June the 7th. Oh, wait a minute, let me check that. I believe it was June the 7th, 1979. And it was done on the lawn of the White House, y'all. Yep, that was the first official holding of, you know, the commemoration or the representation or whatever. And I found this photo, and it's so funny because Kenny Gamble, Leon Huff, President Jimmy Carter and his wife, they're sitting on the grass, actually. And Kenny Gamble and a lot of the other people are sitting in chairs. And Kenny Gamble was married to Deanna Williams, who we're actually paying tribute to this year as part of the Million Women March 25, because she's one of Philly pioneers. Again, she was the co-founder of the Black Music Association, which morphed into the Black Music Month piece. So just a little history on Black Music Month. Okay, I'm going to give you some more insight into that because it's a lot more deeper than what you think. Because initially, and I should have known, but you know, if you know our brother Luke Munn, aka Kenny Gamble, you got to know that he's definitely about making that money, right? You remember his song, "Full of Love and Money"? Yeah, he wrote that. And so, as it turns out, Black Music Month was initially, at least to a great degree, about money, making sure that the artists, the composers, the people doing, you know, in the music business could get not only their equal share, but could get better control and so forth. That's what the focal points really was. Not so much as appreciating the music. I mean, that was a part of it, of course, but it was definitely about the finance part. Okay, so again, just a little tidbit for you. We like to give you history when we have these conversations. So again, we're going to give you a little more information about that shortly. Okay, family, listen, let's do this. We're going to go to our live line right now. And again, I think Baba is ready. I think I see him in queue. And we're going to start off with talking about, there was two things that he posted, but the one that talked about ancestors is the one that I really, really enjoy. But I've enjoyed almost everything that he's posted so far. And again, I don't spend much time on Facebook because I got too much to do. So, you know, where I went today and who I talked to and, you know, what train I rode on and all that, I'm like, wow. Wow, this is amazing. These people are killing us. And we have these conversations on Facebook like people used to have on the telephone. You know, you're just talking to folk, and I'm like, whoa, I'm so glad I'm not locked up into that world. But at any rate, it's a good thing, Facebook, when you're doing work, I can tell you that, because it does definitely expedite some of my postings and sendings out. So anyway, let's go to our live line. And we are going to talk with Baba Omowale, and by the way, I'm going to ask Baba to be on one of our advisory councils, because the other thing that we realize is that just because you reach a certain age does not necessarily qualify you for every type of advisory council. I learned that the hard way, and so in certain things, I'm now being a little more selective. And so one of our elders or seasoned citizens, as we say in some circles, is going to be what we call the Race First Elders Council. So that way we know that particular group of elders, they get it, a certain concept, idea about certain things. And so when we talk to Baba, I think you'll agree. He definitely will fit into that particular team quite well. So let's do this. Let's go to our live line, and let's welcome for the first time a new day family member. And we're talking with Baba Omowale. Okay, hold on one minute. Yes, greetings, Baba. How are you this evening?
I'm fine. Please, do refer to me as Wale.
Oh, Wale. Okay. All right. You don't want me to use Baba?
So, I mean, you use my whole name, Omar Wale.
Okay.
And I, in deference to my godfather, almost never use that. I use Wale.
Gotcha. Okay, very good. Okay, I will definitely do that. Well, thank you for taking the time to join us this evening.
Mm-hmm. I appreciate you inviting me.
Okay, so before we go any further, just if you would just share with the family a little bit about you. I know I looked at your profile, but I would rather you share, if you would please, a little bit about you to the family.
About myself?
Yes, sir.
Okay. Well, I was born and raised in Florida.
Mm-hmm.
And I opened a bookstore there some 1970. I opened a black bookstore in 1970 there in Miami, Florida, my brother and I. And in the bookstore is where I learned about specifically Orisha. I would say African culture or stuff like that, but I've been learning that all my life. I say it easy, 1,000 books. And the thing I've done since I left the bookstore was become initiated into Orisha.
Mm-hmm.
After I was initiated and taught into Orisha, most people think Orisha is some kind of religion. It is not. Orisha is a science. The science of voodoo. We really don't do a religion. We do a science.
Uh-huh.
People think it's a religion, but it's not. You know, they say we worship the sun in Egypt and this and that. That's not true. We studied the sun. We studied electronics. We studied these things. We weren't worshiping nothing. You know, if you go to a university and you go to one of the colleges at the university and you study, let's say, physical bodies, you know what I mean, anatomy, is that worship? You go every day, you do it religiously, you're there at 8 o'clock in the morning. You know you're doing it religiously, but it's not worship, it's study. I mean, in the sense that we use those terms today. In the old time, you would say worship because people knew you were talking about study to do something religiously like that. But now we have to differentiate to make sure the people of today realize we're not talking about worship because they're caught up in a Christian ideology. And so even the people who determine that they're going to become, you know, spiritual and study African stuff and all that kind of attitude about religion, African religion and stuff, usually they just Christians, you know, they use a different word. Instead of saying, God help you, they say the ancestors, you know what I mean? They just interchange. They have the same approach to the ancestor that they have to Jesus and, you know, the rest of their story. But so what I found out and what was being taught to me at this, because I went to a university, Elisha Shangomi Ma, in the Florida. It was newly developed just for our class, and that's what we did. And we had teachers come in from all over the place for periodic teaching based upon their specialities. And it was, like I said, it was a class that the situation was set up that we knew from the beginning we were not studying religion. Nobody, like, talk religion. We always talk science. Anybody that know Orisha, they know a little bit about it or something like that. Maybe they can understand exactly what I'm saying.
So,
after I left
I was just going to say, just as a sidebar, for those who might not be familiar with orishas or anything of that nature, I mean, one of the things that we feel obligated to do is to help bring clarity. And so this conversation and others is to do that, because this system has created a mindset and have people thinking one thing, and it really isn't. And so our conversations and interactions is to help bring clarity. And folks can then research and do whatever they wish to do after that, but we feel responsible and obligated to provide you with as much information, accurate and clear. And that's the one thing I liked about Baba. When I saw the video, I was like, yeah, I mean, it was so crystal clear. That, you know, as what, there's a movie that came out years ago, and I think it was Denzel Washington, Baba, and he said, so just explain it to me like I'm a 5-year-old, right? So what I mean by, yeah, so what I mean by that is the way you presented it, and even just now, you know, you really don't have to know a whole lot about the specific subject. But the fundamental, the primary is we've been duped. We've been hoodwinked, as Brother Malton said, meaning they switched this stuff around in such a way that, you know, we are either afraid, disillusioned, or whatever, because the system has told us that what we believe or how we do things is just wrong or incorrect, and in some instances, even bad. So, Bob, let's go back to you. So what inspired you, I guess in having a bookstore and then getting more information about Black folks, I'm sure that played a role in you then going into studying more about our sciences.
Yes, of course.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. After studying the science myself felt I had understanding, which is what my teachers would demand, that we have understanding, not just knowledge, not just information, but
mm-hmm.
raw, pure understanding.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so that if a thing came up that we had never encountered or never studied, we can still fathom it. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
So
yes.
My teachers used to teach me when I was in school, you know, I grew up in Florida. Oh, mm-hmm. You know what? Let me clear something up, too, because I want to make sure. I see this as a rampant misunderstanding. Our people
mm-hmm.
never marched. Excuse me. Our people did not initially march for civil rights.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I want
mm-hmm.
that understood. We were not looking for no doggone civil rights up until
mm-hmm.
1960-something. Forget the year exactly, like 68, 67. Some
mm-hmm.
Jews came down south. And two or three Jew boys came down south, and they talked Martin King into
mm-hmm.
civil rights. Prior to that, all our placards, you could see it. You can go see it where Oprah Winfrey would be talking crap and all that about Selma crossing and whatnot.
Right.
Those placards, those billboards, those, you know, things people carry with words on them. They're placards,
mm-hmm.
right?
Yes, yes.
Uh-huh. Did you ever notice what they said? You can just go back and look at them. They all said freedom rights.
Yep.
They never said civil rights. Freedom rights is what we were looking for.
Oh,
and I'm
yeah.
saying that to say this. So at the point of civil rights is when we got on this new treadmill that we're on now. Was civil rights. Civil rights took us out of the world and put us into the United States,
mm-hmm.
which means our problems and issues have to be solved by the United States. We're out of the world. We're no longer in the world.
Mm-hmm.
That little move right there put us in the United States and the United States only. So, we have to come out of that civil
mm-hmm.
rights, because that's a court
mm-hmm.
case. Civil rights is a court case. Civil rights say that the cop can kill you any day of the week he wants to, but he might have to pay a fee. He might have to pay a fine. That's what civil rights say. He might have to pay a fine. You know, if you can beat him in court.
Mm-hmm.
That's civil rights. Civil rights is a court case. Freedom rights was, no, don't even mess with us. We're going to fight. We're going to kill you. We ain't into that. And worldwide, we want everybody to know we're not into that.
Mm-hmm.
That was freedom
mm-hmm.
rights. Malcolm died saying that we should go to the UN on human rights instead
That's
of that
right.
civil rights thing, because everybody
That's
thought
right.
that civil rights thing was garbage, man. And I'm just saying
That's right.
right now, our youth, and I'm saying our youth, which is funny to me, that I'm saying our youth, and they're 50 years old, and I'm saying
mm-hmm.
our youth. But they're running around, what you call pontificating? Is that a word still? They walk
yes,
around pontificating,
is.
Talking about they teaching and all that stuff, and they the elders drop the ball. And I heard people say the elders drop the ball. So I called the young man. I said, you see the elders drop the ball? He said, yeah. I said, this is what the elders said. And I told him what, you know, we say.
Mm-hmm.
He said, well, I don't listen to y'all no way. I said, well, there you go. We told you. You didn't listen.
Mm-hmm.
And then you try to blame us for not telling you. No, we told you.
Mm-hmm.
And now all these children are going around. I call them children. They're 50 years old. I'm sorry. But that's how they strike me, you know. I'm impressed like they're children. They're going around repeating what the cracker told them.
That's right.
They respect an old cracker.
That's
they respect
right.
Jimmy Carter. You can name all them names. I ain't going to go through all them.
Right.
They respect
right.
all them people. But they can't respect their own elders. What just happened? And then they're going, okay. So that's where I'm at with that. And then, so when I left I just wanted to get that civil rights thing in there straightened up. Because
mm-hmm.
our people did not die and march for no civil rights. Talking about our people died for civil rights. No, we did not. That was a mistake. King even said it was a mistake before he was murdered. King said, well,
yeah.
I think I made a mistake and led our people down the wrong path here. He had realized it, but once again, they shot him as soon as he, you know, murdered him. That's another thing. We don't say our people were murdered. We like to say they passed. Malcolm X was murdered. King was murdered. You know, let's say what
right.
really happened.
Right.
And now... I heard you say something about the ancestors. I'm going to move over to them because right now that's where I left. When I left the Nation of Shango, I'm learning about Orisha, which is Orisha is animism. Are you familiar with the term animism, anyone? Are you you know that term, animism?
Yes.
Uh-huh. That's what Orisha is, a system, a scientific system of animism. And so Orisha don't care if you believe in them or not. Orisha is not a belief system.
Mm.
It's not a religion. That's what people say, what's your religion? I ain't got none. I don't have
that's,
none.
Ooh, yes.
Well, you don't believe in nothing? I don't believe in nothing. This is not a belief system. This is a science. Do you believe in electricity? Do you ask your electrician that? But that would sound stupid, wouldn't it?
Wow.
To ask your car man, repair man, do you believe in cars? No. That's what he did. Come on, it's a science. He's working.
Wow.
I think I'm just saying on that. So now, this is the crux of the matter, where we stand for real, though. If you don't mind me just saying my perspective, please.
No, I would love for you to. I prefer that you do.
Okay. I came into a situation where I felt like I think I wrote a little short story on it, that I was a man that woke up one day
mm-hmm.
with amnesia. That's how people seem to me at the moment when I wrote this.
Mm-hmm.
That we had like a man that just woke up one day with amnesia, didn't know who he was,
mm-hmm.
where he was, or where he was from or not, right? But when he woke up, the person closest to him told him that they owned him, that they owned his mother. They were slaves. The person closest to him told him that,
mm-hmm.
right? So
mm-hmm.
he looked around the room. Because he woke up in a room, just for the scenery. He looked around the room and saw other people that didn't look like this guy that was close to him, but they were on the other side of the room in the corner way over there, in the corner way over there. So the man said, you know what? What you're telling me don't feel right to me. I'm going to go and check with these other people, see if they know me. So he went to the next people on the, one of the corners of the room. He said, do y'all know me? And they say, oh, yeah, we know you. We know your people and everything. He said, that guy over there told me I was a slave and stuff. I was his slave and stuff. They say, oh, yeah, that he'd be telling people that stuff. But I know your people. Your people were this, that, and the other. Your people were truth tellers. That's one of the main things we knew about them. They were truth tellers. They were they were travelers. They traveled around. They traveled and visited us. I say, no kidding. Tell me about my people. They showed the man, I mean, the, you know what I'm saying. They showed the man grave sites and stuff, whatever they could tell him about his people. And he said, wow. And he went over to the next people and asked them, did they know about it? And they said, yeah, we know about you too. Your people were truth tellers and the rest of this story, and they came through here. And this is what they did. They invented some stuff. And as a matter of fact, this thing we got right here, we got it from them. And the man said, wow. And this dude over here told me he owned me and he owned my people and all that stuff. So this is what I physically did. I actually got up, left America, went to Japan, went to Korea, I went to Saudi Arabia. I went to several countries at different times, and I went and checked with the people. And as I went and checked with the people, truly they knew us. They would tell me all kind of things about us. You have any idea of Orisha? You know, with Orisha we have altars. You're familiar with that?
Absolutely. Mm-hmm.
Okay.
I
went to Korea,
I've been to Benin.
Oh, beautiful. When I was in, I was in Japan, prefix. When I was in Japan, one of the maids that came to clean my room fell into a fit on the floor, and it took us a while to figure out why she had done that. Why she was a crying fit on the floor. And I was married at the time, took my wife 20 minutes to console the woman. We asked for ambulance. She didn't want nothing, no doctor, nothing. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
What she told us once she was able to get herself and collected and able to speak again, because she was not an English speaker, you know. But when she was able to get herself back together, that she could actually talk again, she said she knew those altars. Her grandmother had them. So when they told me they knew me, I believed them. If you want to say believe, I trusted their word. Because why? They showed me grave sites of people with names like mine. And they told me they were my people. And that's how they knew us. And from every group that I ever spoke to as I traveled the world, I did it for about 6-7 years, but every group I talked to said the same. They said two things in particular, every group. One thing for sure, they said our people were known to speak the truth.
Wow.
Not the niggas, not the people that's coming over now, not the new people. They were very specific. They ain't talking about just new people. They're talking about the ancient people that they know in their history who were our people, right? Koreans told me the same thing. In Korea, you know, okay, you say you've been to Benin?
Yep.
Yes.
Yes.
There's a thing people call African clothes, mostly as Yoruba clothes, right? Designs. Three of those clothes designs, the Joki, the Awotele, and the Ewu, go by the very same name in Korea.
Wow.
They have those same designs, and they call them the same names.
Wow.
When you were in Benin, you ever heard of a place called Edo?
Oh, of course. I went to Edo. Yes.
You know there's an Edo in Japan. Also, in Nigeria, there's a place called Ondo. You ever heard of Ondo?
Yes. Yep.
There's a place in Japan, Ando.
Wow. It's interesting because I know someone named
Kyoto.
Ando.
Huh?
No, I just realized something. Oh, my God. I didn't connect it, but okay. Wow.
If you look up the old name of Kyoto, you know them Japanese cities. I can't even think of what their names are right now. Tokyo, Kyoto,
right.
Something else.
Right.
Look up their old names. One of them used to be named Edo. Forget
wow.
Which one. One was Edo and the other one was Ando. And they changed them once they went into their new, because they went into a new governmental phase too, which included a cultural phase. Like we're going
right.
through, they went through a cultural
right.
phase, a whole phase, man. But they do Shinto. You know Shinto?
Yeah, I'm very familiar with Shinto. Yep.
There you go. They do Shinto. And you know about the Chinese, they do I Ching.
Right. Mm-hmm.
You know I Ching?
Yes, I know I Ching for the exercise and the breathing. Mm-hmm. Yes. Oh,
yeah,
really?
No, I Ching is almost identical to Ifa.
Wow.
Based on the same dynamics of 16. Ifa is based on the dynamics of 16, and so is I Ching. So I'm just saying, worldwide,
wow.
That's what I'm trying to get our mind to open up to the worldwideness. That's why I use the term animism. We're not into
mm-hmm.
a religion. We're into a worldwide thing. Before the cracker came, almost everybody was into animism. That's why we were able
mm-hmm.
to move around the world with no problem, or very little problem. Let me tell you something. People are not going to believe. There was a time when we did not lie. Those were our golden years. That is the power. This is what I figured. I've been over here, and right now I'm in a hermitage, I call it. Hermitage, you know, a hermit?
Mm-hmm.
I'm
yes.
living out in the woods. I came out in the woods, cleared the ground, and mm-hmm. put up a house on it. And I live here in the woods with the animals and the trees and stuff, you know? And by being out here, I realized something. Nature will not support a lie.
Mm.
There is no lie in nature. Nature does, you know that thing, what's the opposite of right? Help me here. What's
supposedly,
the opposite of right?
Supposedly wrong.
Excuse me?
Supposedly wrong.
That's, uh-huh. Well, that's a lie.
Right, yeah. That's why I said supposedly.
Uh-huh. Mm-hmm. The opposite of right is left. But
mm-hmm.
in the lie world, because it's too, you ever heard, they used to put it out when I was a youth. The Superman comic book put out a thing called Bizarro. Have you ever heard of Bizarro?
No, I haven't heard of that.
It's an alternative, like they call it an alternative universe. It's an alternative world, not a universe. It's an alternative world.
Mm-hmm.
That's just like
mm-hmm.
a real, you know, the real world, but it's bizarre. Everything is bizarre, so they call it Bizarro. Everything is a lie, fiction, everything like that, like a Disney World.
Mm-hmm.
You know about with Disney
mm-hmm.
World? Everything is a fiction. That's what we're living in, a fiction. And, you know, there is no belief in nature. Nature don't support belief.
Mm-hmm,
you understand
mm-hmm.
what I'm saying? I think I tried
yes.
to clear that up earlier, that it
yes.
either is or it ain't. Nature don't support a belief. Nature
mm-hmm.
supports what you know, but it don't support a belief. When a cat
mm-hmm,
eats something
mm-hmm.
or a thing eats something, ain't no right and wrong. There's no good and evil in nature. Nature don't support them all in your mind, them all mental states, them all beliefs and stuff that only exists in a person's mind. Not outside of it at all. Cannot. It cannot exist outside of it. And the verification of all of this, I know it's kind of hard. I would think it's kind of hard. I got there through my way, but just somebody hearing me, they'd be like, oh, this is crazy. But look, in nature, 1 + 1 almost never equals 2.
Mm-hmm. Oh, I get it. I get it. I'm just glad to hear, you know, you and a few others say that. You know, when I was in college, I always thought I was strange because I had a totally different viewpoint of things, of thinking process and all of that. And so people would make it seem like, you know, I was like a little off. And then I read Dr. Frances Cress Welsing. And I then realized that there was nothing wrong with me because a lot of what she had said and wrote, I kind of already knew and had already grasped. For example, her idea of ball games. I never liked baseball, basketball, football, none of that. I couldn't stand it. As a child, as a young adult, I wanted nothing to do with it. If people turned it on, I would leave. And then I read, before she wrote the ISIS paper, the ball games was an article that was written in what was called the Black Scholar. It was a journal. And she published the ball games as one of her articles and broke down her concept and view about what ball games, what balls represented. So my point is, after I read her and knew, I said, oh, my gosh, this woman is writing what I think. And then I realized, you know, with her being a psychiatrist, and so I said, oh, I'm cool. I'm okay. Ain't nothing wrong with me. So I get it.
But you had said something about trying to explain things so everybody can get it. So
Yes.
I'm attempting
absolutely.
To be minute.
Absolutely. And with that said, the point that's also being made, family, is that some things are reference points, you see. You know, you have to communicate, and so with that, there has to be some form of agreement. That doesn't mean it's true or accurate. That's what's being said here, that some things are just outright lies. So we're making that real clear. See, some things are just outright lies, right? And I'm kind of going through some of that right now with some people in the city, but the point being that, you know, and some things are points of reference. It's not a thing of just believing it. Like, you know, it's almost like Lincoln freed the slaves. There's a point of reference there. You know, you can, there's some stuff there that you can make reference to or look at or whatever, but to believe or that you voted and voted for the president.
Okay.
See? So these are things that we're pointing out as to, you know, we've got to really break this stuff down now. But anyway, I digress. So please continue, my brother.
I want to say one thing about a lie, though, if I might, because out in this hermitage, I've been realizing a lot, you know. We need to, first of all, who we are. Right? I hear people saying, who are we? Who are we? All that. Okay, let me say about that. Who we are is not nearly as important as what we are. I'll say it again. Who we are. Because that's the focus we've been put on. See, this is a trick that we fall for it every time. We'll say, we want to know the answer, and then somebody will tell us how to phrase our own question. And then they say who we are. They start saying who we are. I'm going to tell you, you know this Black and Proud thing? James Brown went on the Black and Proud tour all over the United States in order to get people of your generation to say they're Black and proud. He was paid by the United States government to do that. There was a United States government plot to make us say that we are Black. Once we say we are Black, we have just lied. Because you can put something Black next to you right now and you'd see you're not that. You already know that, though. But what you have done was lie.
Right.
Once you lie, you set up the – people say, our people are cursed. Yes, but we are doing the cursing.
So with that –
by lying.
And I definitely would agree, except for one point there. What this system and its controllers and manipulators did was made sure that certain things was only either identified or viewed in the way that they wanted you to identify and view it. And so with that said, just like you say animism or whatever, I tell people I study physics, right?
Sigils?
So in order in physics, yes. In
you say
order
sigils?
To get the point, no, physics, P-H-Y-S-I-C-S, physics.
Oh, physics. Oh, yeah.
Right.
Okay, beautiful.
Yeah. Right. So my point is, so rather than to say, you know, I study nature or I study this, I just simply say I study physics. Now, with that said, my concepts of color is not the same as in law or in art or in some other areas of things. You see?
Go ahead.
So I study the black holes. I study it regularly. So again, when I hear people make certain context of things, which is fine. That's fine because I understand what they're saying and I understand why. But I also know
you've seen a black hole?
Well, I make reference to a black hole. I haven't, for the most part, I haven't seen anything in space beyond a certain point.
I don't think anyone has.
Right, but there's a whole lot of things that we make reference to that we haven't seen. There are stars that we make reference to. We haven't seen them. So there's a lot of things within nature or the universe that we haven't seen, but we still make reference to them or we still have some kind of connection or communication with it. So, you know, again, it depends on one's perspective and, you know, one's depth.
That's for sure. That's for sure.
But anyway, I digressed again. So, but I get your point, and I'm sure that our family, or at least some, will get that point. You know, I just always say to people, there's a reason why the white man wants to give a perception of certain things being either of no value, little value, worse value, or whatever. They do that anytime they do something intentionally, 9 times out of 10, they're trying to either hide something, conceal something, or switch it up on you. 9 times out of 10. So I'm always very careful not to evaluate things based on, you know, what they say.
Like what?
Like what they say black is.
Oh, you said about the campaign, the Black and Proud James Brown campaign.
Oh, no, I'm not talking about James Brown.
That's
I'm
what
saying.
You're talking.
Oh, no. I get that. I mean, I've read, not only read, but, you know, have had the opportunity to sit with a few of the elders that came out of that era. You know, and was able to break some things down to me. So I'm not stuck on none of that like that. No, not at all. But I'm just clarifying that when I use certain terms, I ain't talking about what other people are talking about.
Oh, you're talking about, so you're just referring to the term black.
Yes.
I'll just go to my study of Orisha.
Mm-hmm.
Orisha teaches us that we are not black. Orisha teaches us that nothing is black except the inside of Oya's tomb.
Okay.
And so with that's the perspective, as you say, the perspective I look from, just like you might look from a different perspective. I was talking to a guy today. There's a perspective of America, and there's a different perspective of the United States. Those are two different places, two different entities, two different beings, all that kind of stuff.
Absolutely.
One is a country. The other one is a corporation.
Right.
The idea of a corporation is a zombie, a corpse brought to life.
Right.
So they're doing necromancy right in front of our face, but they're calling it and behaving as though it's something else.
Absolutely.
But it's really pure necromancy.
Absolutely. That's why, as some say, you know, when they say you're spelling, you know, in terms of grammar or writing or whatever, these other words tend to connect to those things. So when you are a scribe or a scriber or one that scribe, you rarely hear the word spelling. So again, some of that stuff is very intentional. And it almost, you know, gives you the idea, or it gives you some insight into, you know, what's really going on, which is what I said earlier about that how, and if I may, let me also raise that question with you, or ask that question with you. Since we know that these things are being used on us and against us, as a part of their system, they're implementing their form of magic or whatever you want to call it. So what is our response, or what should our responses be in fighting back, in blocking or lessening the effect?
I think Fela, you know Fela.
Oh, I
think
Fela
said it
a lot.
So beautifully. Huh?
Yeah, I played a lot.
Fela said it one time. The most revolutionary thing an African can do is simply be African.
Yeah, yep.
Don't fall in with them. Don't assimilate with them. Don't accept them. Don't hang out with them. Be yours. That's where our strength is. I just watched Dan Calloway on the Oklahoma. They called it Little Africa. You know that was a term for it? They called it Little Africa. Tulsa, Oklahoma, where they burned it out and blew it up.
Oh, okay. You mean in Tulsa?
Yes. It was referred to as Little Africa.
Yes.
Because when we set up ourselves in ourselves and we turn to ourselves, we were so great. Nothing can beat us. In that little square of 36 blocks or 35 blocks, we looked so good. We were shining like a doggone bracelet. And that wasn't the only place. Everywhere we had the Negro Football League, the original NFL, the Negro Football League.
Yep.
They played in my hometown. We used to go watch their games, picnicking, you know, get our basket together as a family and go watch their games and stuff at the parks within our neighborhoods. That's what they wanted to break up with, integration and all that stuff.
So
we were doing our thing. And anytime we get together to do our thing, okay.
No, I'm just saying, and I agree. However, here's where it gets a little tricky. So our people had all of what we needed. Now, your response was, when I asked, how do we fight back? Since they are doing their witchcraft or necromony or whatever, I'm going to say juju because that's one of ours. But my point is, if they're doing all of this to us, they was doing it then too. And but yet our people was having and striving for their own. However, they still were destroyed. So it can't. That can't just be the
destroyed.
Answer.
Wait a minute. Hold on. No, don't go so destroyed. Where that came from? If
well,
they was destroyed, you wouldn't be here. If they were destroyed,
okay,
I wouldn't
not
be here.
Okay, not only to that extent. But what was built, the example and the sample of having our own was done. They were striving for that. They were doing that. So I'm really responding to the question is or was, what do we do, what can we do, what should we do in order to counter, lessen, resist, etc., the enemy? Your response was that we strive to have our own. And I'm saying was done, and they still was able to if not totally destroy, totally destroy us, but what was built, what was established, all in having our own, they were still able to do the wickedness that they did.
It reminds me, this question reminded me of things I lost in the fire. I lost some things in my life that were very dear to me. And what I realized is this. If there's a lion living nearby, you have to deal with it. If there's a pride of lions living nearby, you have to deal with it. Either you have to move or you have to deal with them lions. That's how I see that. In a sense, I see it like this also. We are so powerful that we are the only thing that can stop us. By lying, we are cursing ourselves. We are taking our power, because that's our power. Truth. Truth is power. We say we are powerless. They say black people don't have no power. That's because you already denied it by speaking a lie. In every lie, there has to be some amount of truth. The more truth in that lie, the more believable the lie. So what we need, the numero uno, the first thing to do about anything, not about no oppressor, all that. I'll get to that in another, I don't know if that goes there, if we go there. But about any of this stuff, the very first thing to do is speak truth always. That's where the power is. You want to become powerful, start gathering that power of truth. Because that's power. Knowledge ain't no doggone power. Knowledge is changeable. But truth is always, it's immutable. That's the power. Knowledge is knowing that. That truth is power. Mm-hmm. Speak the truth always. Mm-hmm. That way, people say, well, how do you know what the truth is? Speak. When you speak the truth all the time, guess what? You become familiar with what? The truth.
Mm-hmm.
Once you become familiar with the truth and you see it coming out of somebody else's mouth or hear it coming out of somebody else's mouth, you're familiar with the truth. You know it.
That's right. I definitely agree with that. I definitely agree with that. I get that. No doubt.
You know, we don't speak the truth and we have depression, we have diabetes. All of them things are caused by lying. The cells of the body. Look, I'm going to say something. We don't deal with God. You know that. Okay, I'm talking about animists.
Right.
People,
yes.
I say Orisha because that's the words we use.
Right.
You know, in this particular time and phrase. Okay, fine.
Yes.
What we're doing is dealing with the creator. Let me ask you a question. Help me out here. What does the Creator do?
What does the Creator do?
What does any Creator do?
Well, I mean, that's a rhetorical question because I would say create. I mean, that would be the most simplistic form. But again, since people relate to or call or have different ideas about a creator, then, you know, there's different motor operations based on what their creator that they think is the creator does. One creator, one group thinks that their creator, you know, brought them out of Egypt. Another group, they think their creator, you know, I mean, it's different variables. So there's no one. One thing,
what
you
does
know,
the word
but there's
do?
Some fundamentals.
What
there
does
are
the
some
word
fundamentals.
Do? What does
sorry,
a golfer do?
A
what
golfer?
Does a wood carver do? A golfer. What does a golfer do?
Play golf.
Yeah, what does a wood carver do? He carves wood. This thing,
right.
I don't care if he's playing PG, whatever, or they carving it, it don't matter.
Right.
That's what they do.
Yeah.
That's what the creator do. The creator creates.
All right.
Now, let's say the creator creates. Yes? Is that what we would call divine? Is that something you would look at as sacred or divine in any way? The creation of the creator.
It depends.
And then you lie about it. You deny the truth. You don't speak the truth of the creation of the creator. What are you doing? When you lie, you are saying the creator did not create what the creator created. What are you doing and looking for what? You might as well just stab yourself in the heart with a long knife. The creator had something actually happen, and you say, no, that didn't happen. Oh, it went this way. You lie about it. And you know what I mean by lie about it. You know what you saw
right,
as far as
right.
your perspective, and you don't tell that truth.
Right.
Like,
yeah.
I ain't saying it's your truth, my truth. I ain't into that.
Right.
But when
right.
you don't speak that truth, guess what happens? You denied the creator. Guess what happened when you denied the creator? You got all them little cells in your body that's reproducing themselves on a constant level. You just gave them new instructions.
Well,
now you got diabetes. You're depressed, first of all, because you lied. Most people lie as a result of fear, right? And I found out today, because I was studying this thing about God and stuff, God is a jealous God, and I said, okay, I can see why they call him God, because he ain't the creator. The creator does not fear anything. Jealousy is born out of fear. Fear that you're going to lose something. Fear that you're not going to have this or have that. Almost all lies are born out of fear. Because we're scared we're going to lose something. We're scared we're going to get punished, so we lie. The fear is what motivates us to lie. And then if you take a little baby, and like Kunta Kinte, when they had Kunta Kinte up there, and he was saying, my name is Kunta. And they said, what's your name? Your name's Toby. And he said, my name is Kunta. That was the flux of everything right there. He said, I'm cussing. He said, lie. And he forced that boy, you saw through circumstances depicted, you know, to lie.
Right, right.
Because he had to bring, the cracker works in fiction. He wallows in fiction like a pig in a sty. If you start lying to a cracker, he's like, okay, you want us. You with us. I see you working with us. Because he's a total fiction. And like any fiction, left on its own is a dissolve. That's why they keep talking about their annihilation. They're dissolving because they are fiction. They wallow in fiction. And as long as you go in fiction with them, they love you. They're not going to do you any better, but they love you. And this is another thing, too. We talk about how they treat us. Oh, man, there's so much here. Okay, there's so much here. We are very powerful. We are. I say what who we are is not as important as what we are. First of all, we are not human. We are not spiritual beings having a human experience. That's some garbage. See, that's what I mean. They keep, we be looking for the truth, and they'll say something that sounds like it might be the truth. Because a lie must have some truth in it, and a good lie that's going to convince people must have a lot of truth in it. Otherwise, nobody will believe it.
Let's do this. I want to open up the lines, if you don't mind, Baba. Family, if you have a question or a comment, we're going to open up the lines for you all, because I'm sure somebody's got something they want to say or share. Okay, this is a wonderful conversation. I'm certainly enjoying it. I hope that you all are also enjoying it and getting something out of it, by the way. You definitely should, because I know I am. But if you have a question or a comment or a thought you'd like to share, please press 1 now, and we would certainly love to bring you in. And we're going to get ready to talk with Dr. Haseem in a few after we wrap up with Baba here. But again, if you have a question or a comment, and family, y'all should have some questions or comments. You really should, because we hit on a couple of things here I think is definitely not only noteworthy, but, you know, needs to be expanded on or expounded on, whichever you prefer. You know, earlier today I was reviewing some of the work, some of the teachings of what some consider one of the greatest sages of today, who recently made transition. I believe he was either 98 or 99 years of age, Credo Mutwa. And, you know, some of what we're talking about, interestingly enough, is also very much in sync with some of what he also taught. And he, of course, was based in South Africa in Azania. And, you know, I mean, if you haven't heard of him, you definitely should check him out. I mean, you talk about wise, brilliant black man. Oh, my gosh. Anyway, doesn't seem like anyone have any questions or comments. That's really strange. Okay, I'm looking through to see, and I'm not seeing. Looks like no one has any questions or comments. Okay, well, moving right along. Okay, so I guess let me just recap briefly. So the answer, or one of the answers to responding to our enemy or enemies, you know, I say we have a, you know, some people say there's a natural enemy, and I call it an unnatural enemy. But nevertheless, it's an entity that, you know, it has been in opposition with us for as long as, you know, history or recordings can say. But at any rate, to respond or to not have those influences mess with us as much, or to have the type of deterioration, two things that I believe has been said that Brother Wale has conveyed, and that is, one, tell the truth. Be of truth. We talk about that here on New Day a lot. We call it Ma'at because, you know, that's one of the principles of Ma'at. Of course, it's truth, but, you know, along with that, we also make sure that we emphasize justice, balance, harmony, reciprocity, order, law, etc., in the context of those orders or of that order, not what people think in terms of the European construct, but in the idea and the ideals of those teachings. And so that was one, of course, again, embracing truth, striving for truth, upholding truth, telling the truth is what has been conveyed. And then the other thing, of course, is to lessen our association and affiliation with them. Would that be the two things that we're highlighting here? Is that correct, Reverend?
That's what I would say.
Okay.
I would even go so far as to say, okay, right now, you know, a lot of times I don't talk social. I don't talk social mm-hmm. mechanics mm-hmm. and stuff. Like,
right.
I don't think I've much spoke about nothing social yet.
Right.
You know, as far as what's happening, current events,
right,
all that
right,
stuff.
Right.
To me, it's always
right.
the time. But I know people are
that's right.
viewed in and that. And sometimes
right.
I have to speak on it, you know.
Right.
So what I'm saying is I would say that people, and especially at this crux, again, because we had a different crux, and we were at one at 9/11, so they had 9/11. You remember 9/11, there was a big push
uh-huh.
for reparations at 9/11 and
uh-huh.
human rights.
Yeah.
And then they had 9/11, and then you were wrong to call, oh, why are you being so selfish right now? America needs us all. You know, and then we fell into that for, what, 20 years? That
right.
crap. Anyway. So right now we had another crux every 20 years or so. From my calculations, we run into these cruxes. I'll
mm-hmm.
be here for the next one. I plan to anyway. But this one right here, I want to move this idea of truth. I know you said all the other 42, 89, 55 laws of the whatever in 99. That's too much. Just speak the truth.
Laws. I said principles.
And be done.
Clarity. I didn't say laws.
Laws and
those
15,
are the laws. I said the principles. No. Two different things. Those are 42.
I'm not arguing with
you. I said the principles. There's not 42
I got you,
principles.
I got you.
Okay, totally different.
I know.
Okay, all right.
So what I'm going on to say about that, though, by saying one idea, is to teach
mm-hmm.
it to the children now. Nobody
mm-hmm.
has to read a book. Nobody has
that's
to
right.
go to college. Nobody.
That's
just
right.
The children can do it. Everybody can participate. The elders can participate, the Christians, the Jews.
Absolutely.
I don't care about your religion, but you can all participate in this one thing. And
you know
what it would do? Besides improve our health, because the cells of our body would be in line with nature, because nature is in truth. Our body would be more healthy. We'd be more healthy people. We would have less
mm-hmm.
murders. You know, almost every murder that happened today was over a lie.
Mm.
In our neighborhoods, our beings do not do not prosper. Our beings,
mm-hmm.
that's why I say what we are is more important than who we are. We are mortal beings. Our beings prosper in truth. Our beings do not prosper. Oh, yeah, you might get a couple of dollars here. You might make a move here. But I guarantee you by the end of it, you'll be like, oh, man, what did I just do? Almost everybody comes to that conclusion because that's the way it comes back around to you. It will come back at you. Our beings prosper in truth. I mean, just the cells themselves. I'm not talking about your thoughts and all that. That's unimportant. Your thoughts could be this today, that tomorrow. Who cares? But I'm talking about your being. What you are is important. And then in setting that up, truth rings of a certain vibration throughout your entire being that makes you a stronger individual as far as life force. Right? The way to make your words powerful, people talk about our words are powerful. You can do this with your words. Yeah, you can do it with your words if your words are full of power. What is power? Truth. So if you speak truth all the time, guess what? You're making your words powerful. So when people say we don't have power, yeah, we're giving it away. Every time we lie, we're giving it power away. So we must be very, I'm not saying just run around talking the truth all the time. You can not speak. Somebody asks you a question, you don't have to speak. You don't have to answer. You can ask them a question. I'm not saying be stupid. I'm just saying, you know what I mean? Oh, I just got to tell you all the time. No, sometimes you ain't got to say nothing.
Right.
That's up to you. I'm just saying when you do speak, speak the truth.
Sure.
Don't try to wiggle around the truth. Speak the truth straight out. Be a man or a woman or a person or a being and
that's
teach
right.
your children. If your children can't speak the truth to you, you are doing something wrong. Now, you know what? I heard a woman say that her child is the demon and this and that and the other. I wanted to slap her. Her child is her child. She didn't did all this mess in front of her child, and now she expects her child not to do it? Itself, the child itself not to do it? Yeah, he's doing all that same mess you did. Come on, man. And then talking about it, come on. All I'm saying is that we have to look at this thing for what it is, not who we are. Who we are is unimportant.
Right.
You might be a sister today, a wife tomorrow, a mother the next. You know what I mean? That's who you are. And none of that, what you are, you can be all of things. What you are is a mortal being. We are immortal, having a mortal experience. We're not humans at all. We're mortals. And they told us, they used to tell us all the time, oh, y'all not human. And we used to argue, and I said, why are we arguing with them?
Right.
that's the next thing. The best thing to do is stop arguing with them. You say, what to do? I'm telling you, don't argue with them. That's part of the assimilation. That's part of being close to them. Do you know that a lot of people have been married for 20, 30, 50 years, and they argue almost every day? So when people say, oh, yeah, well, we fighting, we ain't together. No, if you together, the God at the prison is in prison too.
Okay.
The God at the prison, he's in the prison too. He's in the prison, him and the prisoner, both, they are both in prison.
Okay. Only thing, one can walk out when they want to. But stay right there. We got
not
one.
Not necessarily.
One person.
But yeah, I mean, the idea is that one can walk out when they want to. Yeah, the idea.
Right.
Yeah.
We have one.
But as
one
long
of
as
our,
he's keeping him prisoner, he got to be in prison with him.
Yeah. You're
but
right.
Yeah,
I mean,
know,
I'm getting around that.
The corporation
right.
don't really care. Both of them are assets to the corporation. So
that's right. No doubt.
The CEOs
no doubt.
and the board of directors and stuff like that, they don't care about neither one of them. So they'll replace
right.
either one of them in a minute.
So it looks like we have a couple of comments or questions or thoughts. So we're going to go quickly to the board and open up. Caller, you are at 9462. 9462, your mic is open. Welcome to this, I think, wonderful segment of New Day. 9462.
Can you hear me?
Yes.
Can you hear me?
Yes, we can hear you.
Oh, okay. Very good. You have no idea what I've been going through the entire time y'all have been communicating, trying to just hit one so that I could communicate with y'all.
Okay.
I hit one. And my phone hung up on me. And I said, oh, no, you're not. Oh, no, you're not. And I kept working on it. So here I am. My greeting
okay.
to y'all tonight is my Aki Ebnetair.
All right.
Speak only the
That's
truth,
beautiful.
The word of the Most High. It's a kinetic phrase, my Aki Ebnetair. As a matter of fact, at my youngest son, I have 16 children, at my youngest son's naming ceremony, that's what the ancestors said his name was, Ma'ati Ebnetair, because he was going to be challenged, you know, he was going to be challenged, and it turned out to be true, and it, saying his name helps to invoke that truth for him so that he could act like he has some sense. And I'm enjoying this exchange, the references to Hekau, the words of power, the references to Obosun, Neteru, Orisha, all of these divine energies and divine beings. I'm really appreciating what's being shared tonight. Oh, and by the way, my name is Elder Mama Condi.
Okay. All right. Greetings, Mama Condi.
How
all
you
right,
doing?
Well, thank you.
Bye.
Yeah,
thank you for having
this
kindred spirit tonight. Thank you for having him. You know, it gets kind of lonesome, at least for me. It gets kind of lonesome when you're speaking one language and somebody else is speaking a totally different language.
Mm-hmm.
And I
mm-hmm.
comprehend the hermitage because I'm in that state and phase now. And I can't tell you how much I appreciate it. I love words. I'm a neologian. I love words. I like creating words. I like redefining words. I like studying words and different African languages of words. And when y'all talk my language, and you're talking about the power in the words, the power in that energy that we tap into to do what is true. It's funny. The sister of words is at a loss for words because y'all have basically said them all. I yield.
All right, Mama. Thank you much. I don't know if Baba wants to respond.
Oh, just by saying thank you, I'm glad to have heard your voice.
Thank
all
you,
right.
Kindred Spirit. You stay strong. Keep doing what you're doing. And I will keep you in my high mind and meditations.
Give thanks. Thank you, Mama Condi.
Teach the children. Teach the children to speak the truth. Raise a generation of truth speakers.
All right. All right, family. Well, listen, we are going to get ready to move on to our next segment. Of course, we're talking with our brother, Dr. Hashim Kamboi. And we're going to talk about next, the so-called violence that's going on and bring a little more perspective. Now, interestingly enough, of course, Brother Wale just, really conveys some of the reasons why we're seeing this spike of violence supposedly in our community. And he also mentioned the fact that they do this every 10 years or so. If you really study it, they go from city to city. Like 3 years ago, it was Chicago. A few years before that, it was Baltimore. A few years before that, it was D.C. So they do this every 3 to 5 years, and then it'll be a bigger thing in about 10 years. And so it's a constant thing if you really pay attention and study it. But anyway, we're going to talk a little more about that, given the fact that here in Philly last week they had I find this interesting because this is the first time I've heard in Philly the term mass shooting. And I've seen some shootings before. They didn't call them mass shootings, but now the phrase and the terminology is mass shootings. But yet, of course, three people was in fact killed. More than three people have been killed before, but for some reason, this hype or this phrase, mass. I mean, it's not funny, but you see the game. That
but let me have to say one more other thing about that killing.
Yes.
Three things.
Uh-huh.
About
yes.
10 or 12 years ago. Okay, it's almost like the blackface. You remember blackface? They used to have a lot of blackface in the movies.
Yeah.
To depict us.
Yes.
Now they just use
Al
real
Jolson
niggas.
And others. Yeah.
Now they got real niggas. They don't use blackface no more. Back in the day, real niggas wouldn't defame us like that. But nowadays,
right.
You can just hire a nigga, he'll defame us. All right, fine. I think about 12 years ago, I realized that a lot of those drive-bys and stuff,
right.
They were done by crackers in masks. They were wearing those masks that look real. I saw a guy talking about it on some video. He was showing the different masks and stuff. And he said, man, you put this on, nobody know. And they come with gloves and everything. And then they go drive by, shoot somebody. All you saw was some color guy drive by.
That's right.
We weren't
doing
all the murders at first. A lot of the murders were being done by policemen and Klansmen, where it's the same thing.
That's right.
And the setup
is
once you shoot this one,
yeah.
and they think it's that one, then you got the thing, the dominoes are falling.
Right, that's right.
And a lot of that's what we're looking at, the dominoes falling, but they had to set it in motion. We need to back off and get some other kind of way for resolution, man. That's why I say when we see each other in the street, our first thought is that nigga lying. Whatever it is. Girl, you see a dude on the street, you be riding by in a taxi, and you just see him on the street, your thought is, that nigga lying. That you know what I'm saying? It's true. Because that's the we have built up our own, we're cursing ourselves so hard and so fast, I'm surprised we're able to live. Because our own people see us as liars. Listen, would you hire a liar to keep your books? Would you hire a liar to watch your daughter? Would you hire a liar to keep your business? Would you hire a liar to do this and that and the other? No. So when our people are not hired, and we talk about, they being racist, no, they being sensible. Soon as a nigga get a position, he hire white people. Why he don't hire us? Because, come on, we have our own reputation. We think we are liars, too.
Right,
we need to build a new reputation. This is a reputation we have to be. Our children have this reputation we are sending it to them. That's why I say teach them to be truthful.
Wait a minute,
What's happening is this is a worldwide reputation.
I get that, but wait a minute. White folks are the biggest liars, and they know that too.
Okay.
So that can't be.
They wallow in lies, though.
They're
not the biggest liars. That's their thing.
I know, but they hire
that
themselves.
That ain't our thing.
But I'm saying on the concept of they're hiring their own people. They're hiring the bigger liars.
Oh, you mean, listen, if I got a business, I'm going to hire my son. I'm done with that. I'm not going to hire the guy down the street or some guy I don't know. I'm going to hire my son. I'm going to hire the child that might marry my daughter. That's who I'm a hire. It ain't got nothing to do with who. I don't care where he's from.
Right.
I'm not hiring him. I'm a hire somebody who looks like me, who might be in my family someday, who I can relate to on a vibrational level, like that judge did with the little cracker that shot somebody here a little while ago. He took a gun somewhere and shot somebody. And the judge said, what's up, my boy? Or something. He greeted him like my boy or something. Because the judge can identify with him.
That's
just natural. That's not truly racist. I mean, it's racist. Well, not truly. It's just sensible. The fact that we go to the judge and the judge treats us worse and nastier, and he's colored, we colored. I use the term colored. Because even now there's a movie out called When We Were Colored. I watched that movie, When We Were Colored. And watch the vibe. The people had a different vibe. They worked together. They saw each other. They looked out for each other. We had a different vibe, baby, when we were colored. My birth certificate reads colored. You know? My birth certificate reads colored.
I'm not
colored.
Even going to respond
the one
to that one.
So what happened?
Listen. I want to thank you. We got to move on.
You
got to
get to your next segment. I'm going to get off your phone.
I thank you so much. This has been, I'm going to tell you, I have enjoyed this dialogue tonight. You have no idea. Yeah. It has brought so many smiles to my face. Oh, my goodness. So I thank you. I look forward to talking with you again soon, too.
Here I am. All right. One love. I'll just back off, right? I can listen to the rest of the show.
Yep, you surely can. Yep, absolutely. All right, family. So, again, we've been talking with Brother, I prefer Baba, Wale, and definitely teacher. I wrote down he's a teacher and embracer of traditional African religions, systems and sciences. I'm going to change that for the next time. But thank you so much, Baba. Really appreciate your information and insight.
Will you spell my name? And I'm off. I'm still on.
Yes.
I'm still on?
Yes, you're still on.
Will you give my name? Because I have a YouTube channel, Omar Wale Alania.
Okay. Let folks know.
Yeah, I have a YouTube channel, Omar Wale Alanian, O-M-O-W-A-L-E, that's Omar Wale. And Alanian is O-L-A-N-I-Y-A-N. And I have a YouTube channel basically speaking the same thing, just different angles to get to the same point.
Great.
So, you know, that can spread around. I love it.
Absolutely. I'll definitely put that out in our next e-blast to let people know. But absolutely, we'd be more than happy to circulate that. All right, family. So we're going to move on and get ready to talk to Dr. Haseem again. Thank you, Baba Wale. All right. Moving right along, we're going to take a quick break, and when we come back, we're going to talk to Dr. Haseem and get his not only professional analysis, but also his black man analysis on some of the so-called violence that's going on in our communities. And again, perhaps more importantly, at least in some aspect, what the heck are we going to do? What are we talking about doing? What can we do? Right, particularly since you ain't here, Holly. Nobody talk about us building our own schools, our own cultural centers, our own, you know, for the most part, people are not trying to deal with the concepts of self-determination. We talked about it earlier that this was, in fact, a fundamental character element of our people. And now all of a sudden, you know, we'll go to festivals, go to conferences or whatever. But when it comes to building in our community, you can count them on your hand. And that needs to be looked at very closely, very carefully. Who's doing what in our community to really not only strengthen, but also to bring it forward and to deal with sustainability? Those are the questions that we have to start asking. But before we do that, we're going to take a quick break. We're going to come back and talk about violence, abuse, what we're going to do, how we're going to do it, et cetera, et cetera. We'll be right back. What happened to the sound? Oh, here we go. Sorry about that.
Top, don't be slow. Better finish out your rope. Keep a moving with that line. Drive a man will show you how. Get to work and root that stump. Drive a man will make you jump. Better make your hammer ring. Drive a man will start to swing. Ain't the two things on my mind. Drive a man and quit in time. Drive a man and quit in time.
right, family, we are changing the tempo up just a bit. Of course, in the background, we're listening to a classic. We insist. It's called the Freedom Now Suite. The great, great Max Roach, probably is not one of the best drummers ever, particularly in that genre. The vocals was none other than, of course, Abby Lincoln. And on this particular album was groundbreaking to bring the idea of resistance music during that time period. That's why it's called We Insist, but it deals with resist. It had crossed the barriers, I guess you could say, the basic fundamentals of classical jazz, but also bringing in some of the rhythms, traditional rhythms of African drums. That's what Max Roach was able to do. And on this album was featured the great Olatunji. Now, for those who are into music, I really suggest you do a little studying, because some of even hip-hop today, you will hear samples of certain pieces and certain sounds, certain rhythms. That is what really helped to make hip-hop kind of grow at some point with the rest of development, Diggable Planet, you know, Tribe Called Quest, and a few others that really was doing some serious, serious kinds of work. They listened to certain things, Mos Def and others. Again, Max Roach and him being able to transform traditional African rhythms, beats, as you might call it, placing them into what's known as the trap drums, utilizing the traditional hand of what was is our tradition, our culture, but there are specific rhythms for specific areas, for specific groups, and as Baba mentioned earlier, for specific sciences. And so Max Roach knew how to transform some of that and place it into the modern genre of classical black music.
Love a man and quit in time.
All right. But that's it. That's our little lesson for Black Music Month. And, of course, you know, we could go on and on and on and on with John Coltrane and so many others. You know, there were quite a few really featured on that album. Coltrane wasn't one of them, but there were some other incredible. Hawkins was one, I think, on that album. But anyway, we're going to go back to our live line, and we're going to get ready to talk about this issue of what some are calling violence and abuse in our community. Note, I did not say black-on-black violence. I'm not doing that. But there is a level of, shall we say, aggression, and that puts it mildly. I mean, folks is actually killing each other, but that's not anything really new. I think some things are kind of being really highlighted for a specific reason. And by the way, City Council here in Philadelphia is trying to press the mayor to bring in the National Guard. Yep. The National Guard. Now, I think the white boy killed how many people the other week? I ain't hear nobody talking about bringing the National Guard up in there. And none of them other mass shootings that they did. I ain't hear nothing about bringing no National Guard to none of them places. Maybe it's just me. Anyway, let's go to our live line and let's bring in Dr. Hasheem Kambui. Hey, Doc, how you be tonight?
Greetings, Dr. Filet. I'm wonderful. How about you?
Oh, you know, doing what we do, and I love it. God, what can I say?
I agree.
Yes.
Thank you for having me as usual.
Oh, listen, always a pleasure, honor, and, you know, this is your home. You're home here at New Day. You're a part of it, so... But what you might need to do, I don't know if you have your computer or whatever on, because I'm getting a little feedback. So you might need to turn that off.
Are you still getting some feedback?
Okay, wait.
Is it a
little
better?
I think it's okay. Yep, that's better.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Okay, cool. Okay, so we've been communicating, you know, pretty much all week and exchanging emails and information and so forth. So let's just jump right into it. What are your thoughts about of what we're seeing all over the country? But I mean, in a way, it's not like it's something new, because we was having this conversation kind of like 2-3 years ago with Chairman Fred. I mean, it was tearing up Chicago. So why do you think all of this is like, it's so like, you know, explosive all of a sudden?
Mm-hmm. Well, one thing I would say is you made mention of the shooting in Buffalo. And remember, after that shooting, there was a shooting also in Texas. And there were a couple other shootings. And so when these things occur, of course, there's always a political framing of a discussion. And even now with the violence in Philadelphia, as you mentioned earlier, the verbiage is not so much aggression, which we know of, which has always been an issue. It is gun violence, you see? And so the language is changing such as to shape the, you know, the political narrative of what's going on.
Right.
And as you said, it's very, very interesting. And but however, one of the things that too, which is really what I wanted to speak about today, was the point, as you said, about not only the language that's being used to sort of understand and explain the problems, particularly in our community. However, the way we even go about talking about the problem to then come up with a solution. Mm-hmm. And so that's why I would love, you know, for you and others to help me make sense of, you know, these recent shootings in Philadelphia and some of the other efforts that have not been heard in the media, besides, again, bringing in the National Guards. What are some of the efforts being done at the grassroots level in Philly?
Well, hold on, okay, here we go. Background for me now. Okay, that's better. So here's the deal, or part of it. Money. And what that means is, right now, I have to check to see what the latest figure is, but it is at least like something like $50 million that has been allocated to this, by the city of Philadelphia, just for gun violence prevention, just for that. Okay, so there's other, you know, campaigns or projects or whatever that's connected to, you know, crime or violence or whatever, but just for so-called gun prevention now, mind you, there's at least $50 million there recently. Now that, again, I'm sure that number has increased since the last time I checked. There's a congressperson who is pushing, his name is Dwight Evans. He's pushing for like something like, I think, what was that, $20 billion. So here's the thing. In 2 years, there's an election, as we all know, right? And they're gearing up for it now. They're going to start campaigning next year.
for the 2024 election. So right now, to get people hyped up about violence and particularly gun violence, now remember, that's the Democratic Party's ticket. That's their whole thing. The Republican people, you know, supposedly they're, well, not supposedly, they're for guns. So they play this little game with each other. So now you have all of this concern about guns in our community, which means that black folks in particular and some other folks too are more inclined to vote which way in order to reduce the so-called, to bring about the reduction of crime with guns. See, this thing for me is very methodical, but also very easy to, you know, to examine, Dr. Hussein, because, right, again, in Philly, and I'm sure in other cities too, I'll check with Sister Keisha later in the week, but there's at least 100, and I mean, that puts it mildly, organizations that are anti-violence, anti-drug, specifically organizations. Also hundreds of what's known as RCOs. And RCOs are registered community organizations. Now, it doesn't necessarily mean that they are focused specifically on, you know, anti-violence stuff. But usually, of course, that's somewhere in their platform that may not be their, you know, that might not be their main focus, whereas the other nonprofits, theirs will specifically say anti-drug, anti-violence, right? Now, note, this is money. So when you come with a program that is to fight violence, that puts you in a different bracket to make this money, right? So to go back to what you were saying, Dr. Hussein, there's no solution. None of that is a solution.
Right.
If it was a solution,
however,
it wouldn't
most
increase.
Importantly, as you,
Go ahead. No, please, jump in.
No, I was going to say, to your points, I mean, you brought up some very valid points. However, overall, to your points, as you said, those – well, the money, but also too in the way that the language is being changed to particular political agenda does not examine or bring an understanding or explanation of examining the problems to then therefore come up with a particular response. So that's what I was going to say.
Mm-hmm. Right. Yes, that too. But I think, again, it's very important to make sure that our people are very clear that nothing that you will hear is going to prevent anything. Not them buying back the guns, not them, you know, whatever they're talking about, none of that. And here's the thing that I find even perhaps more interesting, and that is, why people who are having these rallies and these concerns, why aren't they putting more focus on where the guns coming from?
Mm-hmm.
You see?
Mm-hmm.
How,
mm-hmm.
I mean, you know, I know they've been talking about the ghost guns, and that to me is to throw you off track. You have you think that people are able to buy these guns and assemble them themselves and blah, 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 blah.
Mm-hmm.
And you know daggone well the majority of the guns that are being used are not ghost guns. So the question has to be, how are they coming into the community? Folks ain't going outside the community to buy these guns, 9 times out of 10, y'all, really.
Mm-hmm.
So that means they're coming in. How are they coming in? Who's helping to bring them in? Why aren't those questions being asked? How come a lot of the poppy stores, if you notice, I find this to be interesting, and I got to check again with some of our family in terms of their cities. Here in Philly, we call them poppy stores, right? Well, Dr. Hussein, you know what I'm talking about with a poppy store? You know what I mean by that? Because I know you're in the South, so I'm not sure
No, I do not know what a poppy store is.
Okay. Poppy stores are usually, they're usually of Latino origin.
I see.
Primarily Dominican, you know, et cetera. Right?
Right. Mm-hmm.
And they have, for Philly, they've taken over. In the black community, there is literally no stores like that, you know, that sell, you know, regular, you know, like a little grocery store. None in the black community in Philadelphia for the most part. They're all what you call poppy store. Like that used to be mom and pop stores. Ain't none of that going on in Philly now. It's either mom, it's either poppy store or Korean. And some Negroes in Philly literally go into the Korean stores and call those people mommy.
Call them what?
Mommy.
Oh, I see.
Oh, yeah, call them. This is what's going on in our community. And so the point being, again, for those of you who are in urban cities, I'm wondering if you have found this to be. And it's this, most of your poppy stores, meaning your corner stores that sell all of the your daily, day-to-day stuff, why is it that the top of the store, 90% of the buildings that these stores are in, the second floor of the store usually is boarded up, right? But not to the degree that you can't see that there's nothing up there.
Right.
Why is that?
Well, let me say this. Since you were asking those questions earlier, I have another question in terms of important questions to ask based upon, you know, what I was reading and what you said earlier about one of the primary solutions is about bringing in the National Guard. I want to ask you and your viewing audience this question. How can one be an activist and want to bring change and saying, okay, let's turn to the National Guard in order to help restore order? I think that's a very important question to ask because, again, it's from reading the news of what's going on in Philly. You know, everybody these activists saying Philadelphia activists are asking for this or they're demanding this. And by the very definition of being an activist, it's you want change, you want change for your people. However, you know, you're demanding that change by turning to the National Guard. So,
Dr.
Hatim,
you raise a good point. Yeah.
Yes.
You raise a good point. And it goes to really showing how activism and community organizing has now gone down the drain in such a way where, you know, what people think they're seeing now with organizing and activism is not the tradition that you know that was in our midst for decades, and it was carried over and was carried through. Now what we're seeing because of these ideas of multiculturalism and diversity, we're now subjected to this new form of activism. You see, and so again. You know, because people that knew the truth, just as the brother said, people that knew the truth stopped either exemplifying it or upholding it or telling it. And so when things started happening, they just sit back and watch. And they knew that that wasn't really what it was. So now you have this group of so-called activists that are really, you know, they just... They're playing the role of being leaders in our communities, and they're representing the status quo or the type of Negroism that we used to say you know, it, you clearly could identify or differentiate the two. That's not what's happening now. These people now that say they're organizers and activists and all of that, a lot of them are really in bed with the enemy.
Well, I raised that question so much, and thank you for that. I definitely hear what you're saying. I raised that question so to say that there has to be a balance. And what I mean by that is activism is good. However, at the same time, too, we have to recognize our ability to think and plan, such as through goals. So in other words, you know, we talk about or was spoken about earlier about Maat, in which case Maat is applied here. And you can't always be an activist or out there in the community, nor can you just simply always philosophize. The two have to come together, and they merge such that, to your point that you were speaking to, that about activism, such that the activism grows. You know, each generation, whatever previous generation has done, you know, you can pick that up and move forward. Not necessarily, not necessarily there be a disconnect. And that's why I raised that question, because change, we know commonly, you know, and this is what President Obama ran under, that idea of hope and change. And, you know, that change begins with you first. And when you think about that, you're thinking about, again, well, at least from a psychological perspective, you're thinking about the thought and the behavior. And so in communicating the change, you know, what are we thinking that's right for us? Because obviously to address the problem, definitely with the National Guard, that's conveying a change outside of us, as if we don't have the ability to even reason, right? So conveying that thought of establishing a police force, and as you mentioned earlier, a police force being there, they're not telling us how to behave in a way, is not going to change the reality of our people who, in essence, are trained, right? This is not a new phenomenon. They're trained to kill each other. And so the issue is not gun violence. The issue is just that, you know, us being trained to kill each other, or more specifically, what I would call is the realization of the psychological brainwashing, which is very clear here, in terms of the problem, but also too, even the way we address it. Because here the lesson is that not only do we blame ourselves to an extent for our problems, but also, as many people have said, we even look towards the oppressor to help us solve our problems. So in many ways, right, we're what I would say is we're prisoners of our own intellect. The fear of being able to use our intelligence to be able to solve our problems.
Well, I dare say that there's a couple of dynamics here that I don't believe is really being paid close attention to by us as a people. I'm sure white folks have come to some conclusion about this, and that's why they're kind of more able to action. What we also see, and I hear particularly older folks saying this, well, you know, now today, you know, young folks, they have no respect. You know, I hear a litany of different things. And what I think most of our people fail to, if not evaluate it, you know, comprehend is, in this day and age, there is less, shall we say, acceptance of some of the fundamentals that the older generation was raised on. So essentially, folks were connected with the, you know, as the brother said earlier, by the lies, more so than today. And the lies that I'm speaking of were more fundamental. For example, Christmas, Thanksgiving, Columbus. In other words, years ago, you know, more of our people really embraced, believed, that was a part of their, of our culture. I mean, to the degree where that's what you really look forward to every year and involved, and was really involved in it. Well, now that's less because you have more Muslims and other, you know, situations. They ain't into that. So my point is the unraveling of the so-called family, or, you know, people were more this or more that. They were more that because of the lies that we were wrapped into. And then once that started unraveling, then other things began to also manifest to a greater extent. Now, note, this system knows that. They know that the
right.
hold that they had on us, that had us more into a state of obedience, that's kind of, you know, slowly but surely, people just ain't buying into that stuff no more like that. And as a result, it's creating this other kind of havoc, this other kind of chaos, right? Because the mm-hmm. fundamental that people had kind of seemed like it had you in a, you know, in a more stabilized state of being, even though it was a big lie. They don't have it anymore now.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Well, I do agree. Mm-hmm. I do agree that there is less of an acceptance. However, from my perspective, that acceptance would be the ability to work together, connected to, you know, a common thread to sort of like unify
mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
the different belief systems we have. So that would
mm-hmm.
be my point in that, or my perspective rather, to that point of there being a less acceptance, the acceptance of not being able to work together, you know, to unify these different beliefs, to know exactly, you know, what it is that we're fighting for. I mean, again, just to this point about this problem.
Mm-hmm. Well, see, for me, the belief mm-hmm. systems that primarily exist are already divisive. And so the expectation that we're going to be able to reach some capability of working together, that to me, and I could be very wrong about this, but from my perspective, that's not going to happen because it's essentially designed to alienate and to create divisiveness. That's part of the struggle. For example, if you are Jewish or Hebrew or whatever, they've already labeled themselves as the chosen people. So if they're the chosen people, what is everybody else? You see, so then you have the Christian folk that say,